Cheyenne Berkowitz. I love it. Hi, everybody. I'm a grateful alcoholic, and my name is Bob. And I say I'm grateful because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm able to stand here before you today, because as an alcoholic, I shouldn't even be here. Because my disease tells me that as an alcoholic, I should be drinking, because that's what I did. That's what I did best. I thought it was an Olympic star. I wanted to be in the Olympic drinking team. That was my goal all my life. I thought that should be part of the Olympic drinking team. That's what I wanted to be. And as an alcoholic, I drank. I drank for every occasion. I would have drank if I'd have met Ted. You know, his wife wasn't all bad. She said she didn't want to see him anymore. Most of us feel the same way. He just won't leave. But I drank when I was happy, I drank when I was sad, I drank when I was married, I drank when I was divorced. I drank when I fell in love, I drank when I fell out of love. I drank when my boss told me I was doing a good job, and I drank when my boss told me I was doing a lousy job. I drank for every occasion. I drank at your wedding, drank at my divorce. And on December the 7th, 1962, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I came through a door. And I was given a choice. They told me that I never had to drink again, one day at a time. What a novel idea. Just don't drink. I never thought of that one until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, these people are pretty bright. Stupid, but bright. I always thought, you changed your drinks. If rum was getting you in trouble, try vodka. If vodka got you in trouble, try Canadian Club. If all three of them got you in trouble, try rubbing alcohol. When I was in the Navy, I used to drink men in shaving. And the reason why we drank that was because we wanted to smell on the inside as good as we did on the outside. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't have anything like dysfunctional families. I guess we were too poor and none of us understood what dysfunctional meant. But I heard a speaker the other day said, if he came from a dysfunctional family, it would have been a step up. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous because it tells us that all we have to do here is share. Just share our strength and our hope. Just share it. You don't tell anybody anything here. We share it. Novel philosophy. Normally, I think we should rewrite the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when I came here for alcoholics. Alcoholics think differently. At least this one does. I only do things when you tell me I can't. It should say here somewhere, you can't read the big book. You can't stay sober. Oh, yes, I can. You can't come to the meetings. You can't stop me. Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like when I was young. I think I can remember that far back. I come from a WASP family, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, born here in Toronto. Father George, George Walter, mother Gladys. Tough old Irish and Scotch people. Mother had a great sense of humor, liked to spend money. Father had a lousy sense of humor, didn't like mother spending money. Guess which one was Scottish? Had the perfect family. Boy first, girl second, didn't have to do it after that. boy was going to go to school and take over the family business. The girl was going to marry a rich person, and we were going to live happily ever after. However, the boy was named Bob, and he thought differently than most people. He was a weird kid. There was something the matter in my life. I don't know what it was. George always said that we never told anybody anything that was going on in the household. Keep everything a secret. Mother said, don't tell anybody how you feel, just keep it a secret. Three people that were very important in my life were George and Glad and my babysitter. When I was about 9 years old, we had a new babysitter, and she used to do things with me, and she would tell me not to tell anybody because she wouldn't be able to do those things. And they all felt real good, so I didn't tell anybody. I didn't know until after I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years that I was abused. If I'd known I was being abused, I'd have probably stayed being abused because I liked it so much. Anyway, I went to school. That was a mistake. And I didn't think the same way other kids did because I had low self-esteem. I was always nervous. I was always frightened. I was always scared of everybody. Teacher would look at me and I'd say something funny. They'd ask me a question and I'd say something stupid. Then they'd come running after me and try and hit me with their belts and their little rulers, and I'd jump up on the desk and run around and make a big scene, and all the kids would laugh, and I thought they were laughing with me and they were laughing at me. And that's how my life was. I just never seemed to fit in. I had that Walter Mitty life. I was sitting in a history classroom, and I'd close my eyes, and I would take a journey of my own. I was always an admiral in the Navy, a general in the Army, the Prime Minister of Canada. There was one little thing that was missing in all of these things, and that was talent. And I didn't have any. However, at the bright old age of 15, somebody introduced me to alcohol. I took a drink. I could still see that drink. It was a little Mickey, about 12 ounces, I think it was, and it was for the basketball team in Assumption. By the time it came to me, there was about 4 fumes left. Those fumes went down. I was about 5'11", then weighed 127 pounds. That was my dancing weight. I could still feel it. Took that drink, was going down, went right to my toes, made them curl, and as I was coming up, I got muscles. I got tall. I think that's what happened. I got too tall and my head went right through my hair. I became strong. And I looked like Clark Gable. I walked down to the end of the bench, knocked a guy right off the bench, captain of the basketball team. I did that. He was all city in 5 sports, and he was lying on the ground. Of course, by the time he got up, everybody was holding me because he'd have killed me. Went out, played the best basketball game I ever had. We wore purple and white shorts. 127 pounds of dancing dynamite. They used to throw the ball at the shorts and hope I was in them. Well, that night I was in them, all right. I wanted to be out of them, but they wouldn't let me. And then after that, I don't know if you remember those things, but there are a few of you out here that'll probably remember them. After we played basketball, then we would go and we'd have a sock hop. We'd go back into the gymnasium after that and we'd dance in our socks. Some of you will remember that. It was a cheap way of waxing the floors. Well, I took that drink at 15 and we had a lot of trouble. We started running out of schools. I didn't last in schools very long. I went to public schools. I went to private schools. I went everywhere where there was a school, but I just didn't make it in anything. And we had what they call family meetings. And in these WASP meetings, my father was the head of them because my grandfather had died. The only other one I went to was one my grandfather had, and we were there because my uncle had the failing. Poor Uncle Khan failed to negotiate turns when he was driving, and he'd always park his car in trees. Had a lot of problems at functions around Christmas and Thanksgiving, keeping his face out of the food. So they had a meeting. They didn't know what they were going to do with him. They just told him to pull up his socks and drink like a man. So he pulled up his socks and he drank like four men. And I remember that meeting. And I love my Uncle Con. He was the only one I could relate to, and a little while later I found out why. Well, about 16, they had a meeting for me, too. I was sitting in a park, Jackson Park in Windsor, Ontario, and a whole bunch of gang people were all around there, and somebody got killed, and it was decided that some people should go to jail and others should go somewhere else, and they had a meeting, and my uncle was a judge, and he said, I think Bob should go into the Navy. And I ended up in the Navy. And the reason why I ended up in the Navy was... The philosophy behind it was that the Army and the Air Force were 3 years and the Navy was 5 years. And at the ripe old age, I went up to HMCS Hunter and got my uniform. I was in the Navy. I'm a man now. And I joined in HMCS Hunter, and that's what I thought I was, a hunter. I was going to save the world from me. I look real good in my little uniform, skinny little guy, got on a train, went up to Cornwallis, and these guys yelled and screamed, and I wanted my mother. First time I ever wanted my mother. These guys were mean, and they were big, and they yelled, and they didn't know how sensitive I was. But I took a few drinks, and they didn't scare me. And in my naval career, I had all kinds of wonderful things happen to me. I went to detention. I used to throw up a lot. I was always in some sort of trouble. You know, most of you that have been in the military know the military philosophy. Get drunk, get lucky, and avoid work. Well, I carried that philosophy on right on till I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. Many things happened to me in this little drinking period, and I want to get into AA, and I'm going to just tell you one. I went to Frobisher Bay in the Northwest Territories. It's the only place I could get a job. I was working for the Strategic Air Command. I was a firefighter. I don't know. I was always trying to put out a fire, the one that was inside me. And we were drunk all the time. That was normal. We were just drunk all the time. One time we were on a radar site, and the guy said to us, he said, we had just borrowed the fire truck and took it up there to the radar site. And he said, let's get back down to the base. He said, there's more going on at the base than there is in the radar site. And he said, how do we get down there? And I said, well, we'll just drive the truck over the cliff. And we did that, and I ended up in the Montreal Neurological Institute for 4 months, paralyzed from the neck down. When I got out of there, the first place I went and had a drink. Because I'm an alcoholic. And I drink for every occasion, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. As an alcoholic, I always thought I was a lover. I know none of you ever did that, but for some unknown reason, I was sick, and I always needed the company because I always had low self-esteem, and I didn't like myself, and I always wanted somebody to make me feel good. And I went from this person to that person, and this person, and that person, and I wanted them to make me feel good, and they did for a while. And then shame would come back, and the fear, and the guilt, and the remorse. After every drunk, whether it was one day, 1 week, 1 month, that would always come back. The fear, the shame, the guilt, and the remorse, and I would say I'd never do it again. I was in Toronto and I ended up having a drunk like I usually do. It wasn't an exciting drunk. It was just the last drunk. Same thing, went into the bar. I said, I'm only going to have a couple. That meant a couple of days. You feel good. I would go to a nice hotel, I'd buy cocktails and everything, and then I'd go down to the sleazier, the sleazier, the sleazier, until I got to the sleaziest, because I liked sleaze. I felt superior in those places. I ended up that morning in the bridal suite of some sleazy hotel. The bridal suite cost $6. $ When I met this young lady that I woke up beside, I thought at night she was a 10, she woke up in the morning she was a 2. She thought I was a 10, she woke up, she thought I was a 1. She was about 75 and I was 25. And I came to AA. And I hope she did too. I don't think either one of us was that great. I was coming back from Halifax one time, stopped in Montreal on the train, got off the train, saw a huge sign, and it said, "Drink Canada Dry." And I tried and lost. Got to Alcoholics Anonymous on December the 7th, 1962, called Girard Street. There's a man on duty there that's my sponsor. I didn't ask him to be my sponsor. He just told me he was my sponsor. His name was Pete W. Some of you might know him. Anyway, I kept him sober for a lot of years. He'll always say it was him, but I kept him sober. He had to chase me around for 4 years. This guy was nuts, he said. Pete came to my house every night for the first year to take me to AA meetings. The real reason was to eat our food. I went to meetings with Pete every night for a whole year, and he spoke at every one of them. He always did buy the audience. But I love that guy because he cared enough about me because I couldn't care about myself, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't care about myself. I was full of remorse, guilt, shame. I was never, ever going to get better. And people that I didn't know in Alcoholics Anonymous came up to me and they put their arms around me and they hugged me and they kissed me and they told me things will be okay. And on December the 7th, 1962, they told me that if you don't take a drink and you go to a meeting, things will happen to you beyond your wildest dreams. And they did. I got divorced, went bankrupt a couple of times, went to jail, and this is all in almost 30 years of sobriety. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous because you gave me a life, and all you said to me was, all I had to do was share my strength and hope with you, and my experience. And my primary purpose was to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And you know, today I don't even know how to do that. All I know is that I can't get you drunk, and you can't get me sober unless I let you. And I was able to let you. Because I didn't get me sober. It was your hugs, it was your kisses, it was your support that got me sober. I had a desire. That's what I came with, a desire. I was so sick and I was physically beat. Spiritually, I'd been dead for a long time. Mentally, I was never any good anyway. And physically, I was shot. And that's why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that God said to me, Bob, I'm going to give you 3 seconds to make a choice. I'm going to put you in a room full of people that know a different way of living. And if you like what they have, you will try and stay sober one day at a time. And that's exactly what happened. And on December the 7th, 1962, I tried to stay sober one day at a time, and I've been trying to stay sober one day at a time ever since. And sometimes I'm very trying. I have a disease. I don't know about yours, but I still have my disease, and it sometimes gets up about 5 minutes before I do in the morning. It's sitting there at the foot of the bed doing push-ups and said, come on, Bob, let's go. We want to play in the traffic today. It's telling me every day, you're all right, Bob. Those people are wrong. You don't need to go to a meeting now. You've been sober a long time. You didn't like what that boss said to you. Let's go tell him off. However, I always get down on my knees and I pray to God. And then I get up and I phone somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I try and let God put the people that are supposed to be in my life, in my life. And I don't try to be the resolve of what goes on in my life anymore. Therefore, whatever can happen to me with infinity, because I don't cap anything. I don't know about you. You all look too intelligent to do some of the things that I've done. But I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's only 2 things that I can't have any control over, and that's finance and romance. I don't do good romance. I get somebody and I fall madly in love with them and I want to keep them. And I don't want to share them. And when they look at somebody, I get mad. And when they don't return my phone calls, I get hurt. Because I'm the old Bob, left to my own devices. I'll self-destruct. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you taught me that if I wanted to love somebody and I want to love you, I have to let you go, and I have to let you go on your journey. That you have a vision and that you have hope and that you will be there and that God is in your life. There is a God in your life, and I'm not it. What an amazing concept. If I have a God, then you have a God, and whatever your journey is with God and whatever your hope is in life with God, it's between you and God as you understand Him. And I hope at some point that I will be a vehicle in your life, that maybe that I can pass through it in an hour or an hour and a half or maybe 2 days at a convention and be able to share with you what has been happened to me in my life. The marvelous things that you and the program gave to me and God as I understand them. Because I'm not in the way anymore. Isn't that unbelievable? What a concept. Don't get in the way, Bob. You think. Don't think, Bob. Share. You do, lousy think. Just share. Share what you are. You're just an alcoholic. You're not special. Damn, I hated that. I wanted to be special. My mother and father, George and Glad, come into my life in here, and they didn't particularly want to see me when I got sober. And my sister didn't want to see me when I got sober. And as a matter of fact, they didn't see me until I was sober about 14 years. Because they thought it was just a trick. Because I did every trick in the book to get back, to get money, to get support. They supported my kids. They sent money. Speaking of kids, I think I have one sitting here somewhere in the room. He's got a weird name. His name's Bob, too. Very original in our family. And he's got his own disease, his own recovery, and his own God. And he's going to do it whenever and whenever he wants to, however he wants to. And I can't change it. I can't make it any easier for him. I can't do anything for him. All I can do is pray for him, the same as everybody in here prays for me. And you gave me a wonderful life. Oh, what a life you gave me. I met Ted. That's a challenge. And you told me I could be anything I wanted to be if I wanted to be it and I was willing to put in some work. And that if I stayed sober, that things would happen to me beyond my wildest dreams. And when I first came in here, my wildest dreams were this. I need a couple of women in my life. I need a big car and a big house. And I'll be happy. God, I'll be happy. And I can't get drunk anymore, and I get depressed, so what do I do now? I have a new addiction. I overspend. None of you people do that, I'm sure. I've overspent. I've oversexed. I've over anything that I could do to get a short-term gratification so that I could get through a day. And finally, I had to give it all up in Alcoholics Anonymous and go the way that people had shared with me about the steps. That I had to get and start using the steps, that I had to find a God. And in step 3, it says, made a decision to turn our will over, our will and our lives over the care of a God as we understood Him. It just said, made a decision. It didn't say anything about doing it. I stayed sober for a long time making decisions. My whole life was making decisions. I just never could follow through with anything. But you people still hugged me and loved me and told me it'll be all right, Bob, because when you're ready, you will change. When I'm ready? And I'd look at people and I'd see them and they'd be smiling and their eyes would be glowing and they'd be happy and I'd say, what's the matter with that person? They don't have the problems I have. They don't even look like alcoholics. What does an alcoholic look like? Ted. I belong to the Pine Hills group when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because Peter told me that's the group I'm going to belong to. And I joined it in 1962, and a guy would get up in the room and they'd read the announcements and he'd say, "This is the Pine Hills group. We're named after a cemetery. And if we can't save you, we'll bury you." Ladies and gentlemen, this disease kills. We buried a lot of people. I don't take myself seriously, but I take the program very seriously. Very, very seriously, because I want to stay alive. I want to stay alive one day at a time so that I can be in God's vision and God's hope that whatever He's got for me, I can go through it one day at a time with your help. I need your help. I cannot do this journey by myself. And I thought that I could. Every time I would try something, the results were always the same. Nil. When I do it with you in my life, it's easy. The softer, easier way for me is in the program one day at a time with your love, with your courage. After 14 years in the program, I called my mother up and I told her I loved her. She almost fainted. She said, "That's the best way I know how to kill me. Tell me that." My father got on the phone. I told him I loved him, and my mother ran over the phone and said, "What did you say to your father? He's crying." I told him I loved him. I went home then and I put my arms around my father and hugged him, because all my life I wanted my father to do that to me. I said, "Dad, in my spirit, in my thoughts, I wanted Dad. I just wanted Dad one time to put his arms around me and say, 'Geez, I love you and you did a good job. You're a nice boy. I'm proud of you.'" I went up to see my father on March the 13th. He lives in Aurora and he's 86 years old and he still can't do it, but I do know he loves me. Well, anyway, I went home and I put my arms around him because my sponsor said I was supposed to do it, and I said, "I don't have to do it. He's the father. He should do it." And he said, "Maybe he can't do it. Maybe he's doing the best he can with what he's got. Maybe your mother's doing the best she can with what she's got. And you have a program and you have people around as examples to help you through whatever it is. You go home and you love them." That was a novel idea, one I didn't relish or cherish. But I'm glad, because you kept up and you said, "I had to do these things. I had to do these things to make myself feel better." And I went home and I grabbed my father and I told him, "George, I love you." I didn't say that. I said, "Dad, I love you." And I hugged him. And he stood there and he was free. He froze. He probably thought, "Geez, not only is he an alcoholic, but he's gay, too. He has a father fetish." But it got easier and easier and easier, and it got easier for him, too, because he could stay there and he could hold me and he didn't have to tell me that he loved me. And if you've got family that's alive and you're not talking to them because you feel that they should talk to you first, God gave you the day. God gave you the courage. God will give you the strength. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous will be with you, whatever the journey is, whatever your vision is, they'll be with you. And it's a wonderful day. I'm in an AA meeting in the morning. I was going to give you all a call at 3:30 when I woke up and gave my first lead. I was phenomenal. You should have been there. God loves me so much, He wants me to have a good time. It's only me that doesn't want me to have a good time. That old disease, when it gets up there, sometimes it's in a smoking jacket, smoking a cigar in the corner, saying, "Let's go party, Bob. Let's go real party. Let's tell the boss off. Let's tell the girlfriend off. Let's really disrupt the day." But I don't have to do that anymore, and I don't choose to do it, because you set me free. God set me free. He said, "Bob, you just go out and enjoy the day." And as an alcoholic, this alcoholic anyway, I think from the negative down. You teach me that I can be positive. What a novel idea that is. You can be positive. I got a call from my boss the other day. He didn't say anything other than to come into my office. I put the phone down and said, "I'm fired. It's over." God forbid he should be calling me in and saying, "I gave you a raise. You did a great job." Never entered my mind. We got a new president in our company, brand new president, big guy. lots of money. He called everybody into his office individually to talk to them except me. I'm fired. I'm out of a job. They don't care. Nobody's talking to me. Look at them. They're all walking by my office looking in and saying, uh-oh. That's Elvis E sitting there. We got him, Bob. Finally, I get that call from our new president. He said, Bob, I have to go over the water tower. I'd like you to come over with me just for a walk. I'd like to talk to you. I said, sure, Mr. Hakem. Hung up the phone. Said, gee, Joe and I will really straighten this group up. He wants to talk to me separately. Must be very important because he doesn't want anybody in the office to hear, so we're going for a walk. Probably wants to make me vice president. He came by my office. We started to walk. Well, I'm an alcoholic. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I know a lot of people. It was a beautiful day. Everybody's walking around. They're saying, hi, Bob, how are you? Horns are honking. Hi, Bob, have a nice day. Joe's looking at me, and he said, God, you know a lot of people in this city, don't you? And I said, yeah, I do, Joe. My chest is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I said, I know he's going to make me a vice president. People walking by with briefcases, very important people. Hi, Bob, how are you today? Just fine. Ralph, how are you? Bill? Getting closer to the water tower, and you know, God really works in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. Now I'm about a size 52 in the chest, and I'm about to straighten Joe out. Well, you're in the water tower, you have to go around a revolving door to come out, and just as we were about to go in, two bag people were coming out. Bags all over the place, really grubby looking. And we're just about to walk through the door, and they both looked up and they said, hi, Bob, going to the seed tonight? I forgot for a moment I was an alcoholic. God reminded me. And he loves me so much, he reminds me each and every day. And he said, once you find out what you are, then the rest is very easy. And that's why I try to go to a meeting every day, to remind myself that I'm an alcoholic and I think like an alcoholic. But when I'm with you, I don't have to think. All I have to do is share and care, because you share with me and you care with me and you love me when I can't love myself. Well, a year ago, my mother died. I was called in, flew in on the Saturday, and she had cancer, and I went in and saw her, and she's Irish, and she's got a great sense of humor, and she said, Bob, the only thing I regret is that they didn't let me smoke for a week. Four packs a day she was smoking. It was a little hard at the end. It was only about three packs because she didn't weigh very much, and she couldn't suck those suckers fast enough. But she and my father had been married for over 60 years, and they loved each other, and I didn't know that. And I used to say in my leads, all I want to ever do is see my mother and father kiss. I just love to see that one time, and I could die. So we talked, and my mother talked in her Irish way and told jokes, and we laughed, and we had a wonderful time, and she told me about being a kid and what I was like and what happened. And she got tired, and she went to sleep, and I took my father home, and he was unhappy and sad. He knew my mother was going to die. I took him home and we went and had a nap. He had a nap. I stayed up, and then we went back and we had dinner, he and I, and we talked, shared a little. Because I had the group. I had the fellowship, and my father didn't have anybody but my mother. He had God as he understood him, through the church way, the religious way, and I have it through the spiritual way. And there's two different things. I heard a priest say it one time. He said, religious people go to church on Sunday and pray so they won't go to hell. Spiritual people have already been there. So anyway, we went back that night. The curtains were all drawn, and my dad pulls back the curtain. I'm going to cry. My mother reaches up, grabs my father, and they kiss. And God, let me see that. I knew that they loved each other. I knew that they cared. 2 hours later, she died. But I got to see it because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you told me things would happen to me beyond my wildest dreams. And they keep happening and happening and happening because I have a vision. I have a vision that I'm going to get clearer and clearer each and every day, and I can do that through you people with your help. And God loves me so much, He just wants me to have a good time. He said, you go out and enjoy the day, Bob. You be joyous and free. He said, I'll put the people in your life that are supposed to be there to make it happen. You just allow them in. They allowed you in through this journey. And you have a journey, and wherever your journey is going to take you, I hope it's a happy journey. And I hope it's a journey that you can share with one another. Don't try to do it by yourself, because it's hard to do by yourself. I couldn't do it by myself. I heard a speaker in New York about 3 weeks ago, had 49 years in the program, and he said, if God gives me a day, I give him a meeting. That sums it all up. I love everybody here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the journey. It's a journey of love and caring and sharing. And prior to coming in here, the only words I knew were remorse, guilt, shame, fear. That's all I knew. And it's been replaced with love, kindness, and an ability to make a decision. I can walk down the street today with my head held up high. God will put whoever's supposed to be in my life. And all you people ever told me to do was not take a drink today, go to a meeting, and things will happen to you beyond your wildest dreams. And I know that to be true, and I hope that your wildest dreams are wonderful dreams.